I am an addict.
Thank you, recording in progress, I just heard. Thank you very much for having me. I'm grateful to be here with you guys. For me, it's evening. For all you people all around the world, it's whatever time it is. Welcome. Welcome to anybody new or coming back. And congratulations to all the sobriety that was just taken. Very cool. That is what inspires me today more than anything. And I was quite amazed and quite in awe when I saw people collecting time in recovery when I was new in recovery, and even surprised. But I'm not surprised anymore because, you know, there are certain things, certain steps that if one takes, they are guaranteed a life happy, joyous, and free. And prior to me doing the steps, I honestly didn't believe that. I'm just going to pause quickly, if you guys wouldn't mind, and have a moment of silence to invite my higher power in with me, because it's important that I acknowledge their existence, because without them, I wouldn't be here. Wonderful. Lois Wilson was asked once what she does when she pauses before a meeting for a moment of silence. And her response was that she invites her higher power into the room. And it's not so much in that her higher power isn't always with her. It's acknowledging her higher power's presence and that step two proposition that God either is everything or he is nothing. What is your choice to be? And that very much is something that I need to remind myself and acknowledge all the time, because I have this terminal malady and that's always trying to convince me that I don't have it. And it's always trying to lead me back to getting out of self and medicating, using alcohol or drugs. Thank you very much too, as well, prior to my share, to all the service people that are making this happen, for Jay for asking me, for Russ for calling me an hour ago to confirm that I hadn't forgot, for Jasmine helping me straighten out the time thing. So that I, in fact, was here and was able to be present, because without the opportunity to be of service today and to share my experience, strength, and hope, I know I wouldn't be here with you guys. And this is God's gift, being present and being accountable to things that, until the 12 steps of recovery, in which I gained conscious contact with God and I'm constantly seeking, I did not have these things. So what was it like for this alcoholic and addict? It's funny. The disease of alcoholism, someone, an addiction, which I believe to be the same terminal illness, just different substances, someone had shared with me that alcoholism, the ism, is an acronym for I separate myself. And that's very much what I still do throughout my recovery and my journey. Unconsciously, it just comes. So my most recent bout with this was about 30 minutes ago, hearing Andrea share, and her share was so powerful and so beautiful. And I immediately thought to myself, what am I doing here? I don't have anything to offer. This person, Andrea, is just absolutely spitting fire, and I'm hearing God come through her. I should just check out and leave. And this is my illness now that I know is simply not true. You know, I am not my thoughts. I don't need to identify with my thoughts. I need to identify with the actions that I take and the things that I do opposite to what my mind is telling me. So when my mind tells me I am not good enough, I am not deserving, I know that in fact I am good enough and I am deserving. And if God very much is everything, then this is going to go exactly the way it's meant to go. And it has nothing to do with me. What's important is I just simply set my ego aside, which is why I paused and I prayed and I come in here wholeheartedly. And if just one person relates one minute iota to what I have to share to you today, then this has been more worthwhile than anything that I've done the entire day. I come from a long line of alcoholism and addiction, but I didn't know I did. And I remember right from a young age, I didn't know that I felt different. I felt like myself. I always fit in, or I always appeared to fit in, but that's because I never had a purpose or I never had an identity. My self-worth was very much based on what others think of me. And this still I can get very much caught in, and I need to be careful about that. I had a good upbringing. I was a child of divorce. But I had two parents that very much did the absolute best they could. And I really didn't need anything, but I was never satisfied with anything at the same time. And, you know, the book talks about us living double lives. I lived a double life from the moment that I could remember. I guess they say opposites attract. Well, my parents were polar opposites. And when I would go to my dad's house from my mom's house every Wednesday and every second weekend, I needed to turn into a different person because I had perceived that I needed to be somebody other than myself in order to be loved and to be deserving of this parent's love. So I would become somebody else. And so, I mean, I think it'd be incredible to be a fly on a wall looking back at how different I was when I was around my mother versus when I was around my father. So I think prior to getting addicted to mind-altering substances, I was very much addicted to other things, but it began with dishonesty and it began with lying and it began with this power that I had of knowing that someone didn't know. And that addiction progressed prior to cocaine and or alcohol until into food, into video games, anything that this mind could use to get out of its present moment and somewhere else, I was going to latch on to that. From the very beginning, I drank differently than most. I remember the first time that I ever got drunk. I was with my two cousins and we were in London, Ontario at my Nana and my boss man's house. And ironically, I didn't know it at the time, but me and my boss man, my grandpa, were kindred spirits. At 65, he died 28 years clean and sober from all mind-altering substances. And we had this bond prior to me even knowing what recovery was or even knowing what alcoholism and addiction was. And my Nana still to this day, she's 92. She says, I think that your boss man knew that you were alcoholic. And she's so proud of me that I'm clean and sober now. But I had this first drink with my cousins. It was peach schnapps in my grandparents' basement, and we got loser pissed. But from the moment that drink went into my mouth and settled in my stomach and spread through my body, this restlessness and irritability and discontentedness that the book tells me I had was relieved. I had the sense of ease and comfort. Like Bill talked about, I had arrived. I finished the bottle. My two much older cousins woke up the next day with a hangover. I was 11 years old, and all I could think about was, when was this going to happen again? A couple years later, my drinking became more regular, and what happened? I'm just gonna keep a eye on the clock. I'm getting freaking text messages from my family. I make sure I mute everything. Pardon me. Hope you couldn't hear that. But anyways, so I started drinking alcoholically, and I from the moment I can in high school and elementary school, I drink and I black out. But every time I do it, the consequences of my actions do not provide me with any power or ability to stop. I only have the euphoric recall about how great it was before the car I destroyed or the friend's couch I ruined with my vomit or whatever the case may be. And that continued on for a very long time. And it's kind of funny now looking back, and I know my higher power has a sense of humor, because I don't know if you guys had this, but in my high school, when you graduated, you had a yearbook, and in that yearbook, there were awards, and the awards were like, oh, best dressed, most likely to be successful. Well, I won two awards in high school, and the two awards that I won were party animal and worst driver. Right. And now I'm a clean and sober member of Cocaine Anonymous, and I'm a professional class one truck driver for a living. So it's pretty ironic that that's where I am. My illness progressed quite rapidly when I left high school and I left home. I went and traveled in Australia for a year, and then I came back to Canada, and I went to university. And after a year of university, I started experimenting with hard drugs. My grades were good. But I just was not happy. I was not satisfied. I was not content. I was starting to really obsess over these drugs, but I was able to white knuckle it and wait till weekends or wait till exams were finished. And I went to work one summer on the Alberta oil rigs. And that summer, that 3-month period ended up being a 13-year period where I dropped out of university, and I left the rigs 3.5 years ago and flew to a private treatment facility to get help for cocaine addiction. Now I thought that I chose this lifestyle because of the money and because of the power, because of the authority, because of the material possessions that I was able to attain to try to fill that God-sized hole that I didn't know I had. But what I really left for and never returned was because I was thousands of kilometers away from my family, and I was able to keep this addiction rolling undeterred and safe, because that was the most important facet of my entire life, was my addiction to cocaine and alcohol. So, you know, on the outside, I had this amazing life prior to recovery. But on the inside, I hated every being of it. I had an amazing house. I had an amazing partner. I had all the toys. I had a bustling career. But I wasn't satisfied with the person I was. And I could not stop using drugs or alcohol. And it was getting to the point of incomprehensible demoralization. I didn't understand that when my sponsor took me through the book the first time, but he dumbed it down for me as crossing all those invisible lines in the sand you swore you'd never cross. And it got to the point where I was doing cocaine every day of my life. And I was going to work. I was so good at hiding that I was on cocaine that nobody knew. And I was this high functioning cocaine addict, whatever the fuck that means. And I got to this point where I knew I needed to stop, but I didn't want to, and I didn't know how. What happened, unlike any other, I tried quitting several times, and what happened was, for the umpteenth time, my partner, God bless her, she's an amazing person, my ex-partner kicked me out of our house for the umpteenth time. And I didn't think it was any different than any other time. I was always excited when that would happen because I could get my hotel room and I could use the way I wanted to use, locked up for a couple of days. And then we'd make up and kiss and make up and everything would go back to normal. But this time she said, you're never moving back into our home. Our home is now my home. The police will be here tomorrow to escort you and your belongings off of my property forever. And I was so sick that it didn't matter. All I could think about was, yes, I get to use more. And so this was the first time that I acknowledged or recognized that there was a power greater than myself working in my life at a time before I even believed in a power greater than myself. I don't know how many days I was up for, but I remember there was a pile of cocaine and a ham and pineapple pizza. And I'm in this scabby hotel. And for the first time in my adult life, I absolutely break down bawling, crying, sobbing uncontrollably. And it was the first time where I was more scared to continue on than I was to say those three words that I thought I could never say to my family. And those three words were simply, I need help. You know, I didn't know what to do, but I knew that I couldn't do this alone and I needed to stop. So my sister, who's also clean and sober, picked me up, drove me to my parents' house 1,000-some kilometers away so I could tell them face to face. And I told them that I was a drug addict and an alcoholic, and they didn't believe me. They thought that it was a cry for help to try to justify the 13-year relationship that had just fallen down the tube. But they actually got to see me one last time use for the first time before I went to a treatment center here in British Columbia. And I went to this treatment center, and if I'm being completely honest with you, I went to die. I knew that it wouldn't work for me. I didn't know what it entailed, but I had no other option. And I wanted to make sure that I could show people that he tried before he left. So I boarded a ferry with my father and I went to a treatment facility, and I was only supposed to go to this treatment facility for 28 days. And this treatment facility was the treatment facility that I first found God, that I was first introduced to Cocaine Anonymous and the 12 steps, and that I had a spiritual awakening. And the obsession has removed. I got to this treatment facility and I remember I was so sick. The doctor took me in and I was caught in such alcoholic delusion, right? Where I can't differentiate the true from the false. When she asked me why I was there, I could have passed the lie detector. I said to her that I'm here because I do too much for others and that I need to start doing things for myself, right? Not knowing that selfishness and self-centeredness and living in self-centered fear is the very root of my illness. And I need to be selfless if I'm going to get clean and sober. But I actually went to only stop using cocaine. And I told this doctor that I'm going to learn to drink like a normal person. And I remember it still plain as day. She laughed at me and said, "We'll let the counselors deal with you out there." And after she checked for all these types of things, which thank God I didn't deteriorate my health too bad, I went out and I saw the steps on the wall for the first time. And I'm a recovered Catholic along with alcoholic and addict. So my conception of a God, of my understanding, was a religious God, was a punishing God, was the God in the white cloak with the long beard and the staff, who I could never appease, who I could never do anything good enough, right? There's that adage that I heard, and this is when the difference between spirituality and religion set in. Someone said to me, Do you know the difference, Eugene, between religion and spirituality? I very much thought they were one and the same. And I was very hung up on this God word. And they said to me, the difference between religion and spirituality is religious people don't want to go to hell. And spiritual people are people who have already been there. And I could resonate with that because for the longest time in my life, I thought I was a failure. I thought I was unlovable. I thought I was useless. Pardon my French. I thought I was a fuck up. And you people taught me that I was none of those. I was simply sick. All I was is sick. I have this terminal illness made up of a physical allergy, a mental obsession, and a spiritual malady. And if I took certain steps, I wouldn't have, not only would I not have to drink or use again, not only would I get to live again, but I'd get to live a life beyond my wildest dreams. I did not think that was true, but I was going to give it a shot. I was going to give it a shot. And that's what happened. I met my first sponsor in treatment, and I was only supposed to be in treatment for 28 days. And I found out that if I got to stay for 90, I'd actually get to complete 12 steps of Cocaine Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous. Pardon me for violating the traditions there. I always forget what fellowship I'm speaking in. But anyways, so I did the 12 steps and I had a spiritual experience. I was given a big book and they weren't directly the steps out of the big book, but they were enough to sustain my growth until I got that one-on-one relationship with a sponsor and where we could go through the steps like the first 100 did and have that spiritual experience like they did, going through the big book, starting on the preface, ending on A Vision for You and Dr. Bob's Nightmare. And when they told us to take action, we took action. When they told us to stop and pray, we prayed. When they told us to help others, we helped others. And in doing that, I haven't had to use a drug or a mind-altering substance for a few years now. And that's an absolute, it's an absolute blessing. Prior to going home, I resigned from my job in treatment and I had nowhere to go because my ex had our home and we were going through a separation of assets. And thank God my father helped us through that. I was supposed to return and live in my basement where it all started, live in my father's basement. It all started. And my sponsor said to me, I don't think that's a very good idea, Eugene. Why don't you come live with me? I don't recommend this for everybody, but I lived with my sponsor for my first year. My sobriety date is March 7th, 2018. And I moved out of my sponsor's home March 1st, 2019. 6 days before my 1 year cake. And I was very fortunate in that I didn't need to work right away. I was able to baby step my way in. And living with a sponsor for my first year and not working till 10 months clean and sober provided me with the foundation that this addict and alcoholic needed. We woke up every morning at 7 a.m. and we prayed together. We meditated together. We read the big book together. I learned how to help others. And he taught me that. And he taught me what to do when I got caught up here. Because this is my problem. This is my problem today, right? If I don't consume alcohol or drugs, the physical allergy, as progressive as it might be, is irrelevant to me. But the mental obsession and this illness of the mind is what I don't need to contest with it. God needs to contest with it for me, right? It doesn't look like today, hey, Eugene, we'll pick up some Coke and go on a run. What it looks like is, Eugene, you don't need to go to that fucking 24-hour speaker meeting. You had supper plans, you know. You're having such a nice nap. Just silence your phone. Go back to bed. You did your morning routine yesterday. Why do you need to do it today? Nightly inventory, you're fine. You don't have any big resentments. Home group, those people don't even like you, right? This is how my illness works in my life today. Any small thing to stop me from participating in the program of recovery that has literally given me my life, it does not want me to be a part of. It wants me to be separate from it because it wants me to be alone. It wants me in isolation so that it can get between my 2 ears until I actually believe my own bullshit, until drinking and using inevitably become my only solution again. I'm grateful because they're not today. And that's because of this program of recovery, the 12 steps and of God. So talk a little bit about what it's like now. You know, when someone said to me, your life is going to be better than your wildest dreams, I honestly equated that with three things. And this goes to show how sick I was entering the rooms of Cocaine Anonymous. I thought it was going to include a lot of money, a lot of power, and a lot of sex. That's what I thought they meant by that. That was like the big three for this guy. Where I'm at today, 3.5 years sober, is I have less money than I've ever had. I'm single, so I'm not having sex. And I have zero power. But what I do have is I have a power that works in my life that is greater than anything I could have ever imagined. When I so choose, acknowledge its existence and surrender to its life choices for me, you know. But what I do have that replaces everything I don't have is that God-sized hole that's in my chest, that was in my chest for so long, has been filled. But it constantly needs replenishing. It constantly needs prayer. It constantly needs meditation. It constantly needs working with other alcoholics and addicts. This is the bright spot of my life today. And through constant thought of others and self-sacrifice, this is why I am still clean and sober. And there's no doubt in my mind for that. So my life has become better than I could have ever imagined it, but not for the reasons that I thought. Today I'm actually, and this is crazy when I think about it, I almost like who I see in the mirror. I'm not there yet. But like you guys promised me, you'd love me until I can love myself. And we're working on it one day at a time through God, through the steps, through acknowledging our character defects and doing the best to let God remove them, not Eugene. When I try to remove my character defects, they get a lot fucking worse before they are removed, right? I need to acknowledge them and I need to give them over to a power greater than myself and take the action to remove them, but it's really not up to me, you know? Yes, this is a program of action. Faith without works is dead. It's a program that is not meant for those who want it. It is not meant for those who need it. It is meant for those who fucking do it, right? It is meant for the people that put one foot in front of the other and do all the things we knew wouldn't work. We didn't understand why we were doing. We didn't agree with them and they didn't make sense. And what happened for me was all those things are the things that are indispensable in my life today. they're the things that I need more than anything. You know, in this program, you know, it's not all blowjobs and butterflies, as they'd say, right? I mean, I thought that I'd get clean and sober and life would stop happening, right? That delusionally everything would be incredible, you know. But the truth of the matter is that God has laid this spiritual toolkit at my feet. And since I've been restored to alcoholic insanity, since I've been restored to alcoholic sanity, and the obsession to drink and use has been removed, I need to pick those tools up and I need to practice them to the best of my ability in my daily affairs. And that can be really hard. You know, that can be really difficult when things happen in my life that I try to think that I know what God's plan is for myself. And there are always things that pull on my heartstrings, that affect my emotions, that alter my mood, you know. Because when I'm controlling, when I'm manipulative, when I'm deceitful, why am I controlling? Why am I trying to change something that is? I didn't know that before I came here. I now know that what I'm trying to do is create this safe place within myself. And I've got these preconceived notions and these prejudices about what life should look like, about how things should be. So what I'm actually trying to control are my twisted emotions inside, because I'm as sensitive as a person, as many of us are. And so I need that person to act a certain way so that I'm okay. I need that person to do this for me so that I'm not scared. And why I do this is because I have a lack of faith. I have a lack of trust that things are going to go the way that God has meant them to go. And that's when I need to revisit the steps regularly. And I need to be reminded. A lot of people talk about a short memory. I don't have a short memory. I have an illness that's trying to kill me. I have fucking resentments since kindergarten. I don't have a short memory, right? I need to be reminded of the things from my past that worked out when I thought they weren't going to work out. The times when I felt so alone that I would never be anywhere or happy where I am today, and here I am happy, right? The times when you lose a loved one, you know, that passes on, and you think you're never going to be happy again, and you are. The time when your heart breaks and you think the person that you're going to spend the rest of your life with decides they don't want to be with you. The illness that you have to face with friends and family. All of these are tests to let my higher power in, right? Because what we talked about at the beginning, God either is or he isn't. What is your choice to be? Today, God is. God is everything in my life. There's a word that I believe describes alcoholics and addicts. Thank you. I saw the 2-minute sign. There's a word that I believe describes alcoholics and addicts to a T, but isn't mentioned much in the rooms. And that word is resilient. That word describes me and my fellows more than any word that I can think of right now. From the bottom of my heart, I really need to thank you guys for allowing me to be here with you today and to share my experience, strength, and hope, and to hear others share their experience and hope, and to be in a meeting of people who really get me, you know, because without all of you and without your love and care and support and all the things you've taught me, and without the constant recognition and acknowledgement and constant seeking of a power greater than myself, there's no way, you know, that I would be here. If you're having a difficult day, please reach out to somebody, and sit in that gratitude and take action, because the truth is that we are the lucky ones today. We are the fortunate ones. We are defying the odds. Thank you very much. I love you all.